When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to Macro Cap News on Friday the 5th of September. Oh, I never get the date right, do I? Hang on, let's check. I try to start off quite enthusiastically and I mess up the date. It is the 5th. I should know that. I've been looking at stuff all day with the date on it. Friday, 5th of September, 2025. There's not much news out today, really, but I'll cover one company, and there's a good read across to another company, which you could take advantage of, I suppose. Let's start off with some macro news, first of all. US job markets weakens further in August. The US data is being monitored for signs to support market bets on a Federal Reserve rate cut in September, which climbed above 99%. So there's a 99% chance of a rate cut now in September. And of course, you know, we follow the American markets pretty much. So it'll be good for the markets there. And I think that's what happened. You know, what is happening across the world? You know, jobs are weakening, labor markets rolling over. And there's the worry, will it lead to a recession? It's hard to say. It's hard to say because once these things start to get momentum, they tend to get worse, don't they? So, but they're saying it's sort of, you know, bad news is good news because if rates come down, of course, it's good for the markets. The August jobs report on Friday showed non-farm payrolls increased by just 22,000 for the month, well below the 75,000 expected by economists surveyed by Dow Jones. He's a busy guy, that Dow Jones, isn't he? Declines in US dollar provided an initial sign that investors saw continued support for an upcoming cut, with the euro and sterling both last trading around 0.6% higher against the greenback. Yeah, man. Yes, but like I said, the markets they tend to be a bit toppy. I mentioned this yesterday, the NASDAQ and S&P. Remember that we're at the point now where I think 50% of the gains in the American markets, the S&P 500, or the NASDAQ especially, is driven by seven stocks. And so, you know, it's not a true reflection of what's going on. And I think, can this be sustained? Because if the general labor market's getting weaker, then sentiment will roll over. And if you look at NASDAQ right now, it started up today on that news because they thought, okay, there we are, interest rates. But you realize, but if the economy's getting weaker, well, it helps, a lag effect, isn't it? So there could be, I've heard just now on CNBC, they're saying up to 3 rate cuts this year. And I can see us sort of following that closely because our jobs data is not going to be better. It's dreadful, in fact. So NASDAQ's down 0.7%. It did peak above. That's a sign. It peaked above all-time high today at 21,861. And that's 21,546. So spread that is quite big. Dow Jones is down 0.7% as well. With the S&P 500. It's just, I might begin with S. There we are. It's down also 0.7% to 6,458. Let's look at the, first of all, I just want to mention Angela Rayner. I know it's not really, well, she's in housing. She's promising 1.5 million. But she's half glad, really, because there's no way she's going to deliver 1.5 million houses, new houses built. So that's never going to happen. So she escapes that anyway. But I do feel a bit sorry for her. Because if you think of it, she's quite inspirational. She left school at 16 whilst pregnant without any qualifications. Now, you imagine being in that situation as a 16-year-old leaving school pregnant with no qualifications. You think your life's doomed. You have no future. And yet, she later trained in social care at Stockport College and worked for the local council as a care worker. And then she went on to rise to become the second highest position in government. That is, you know, regardless of politics, whether you like her or not personally, whether you like her dress sense, which is dreadful, as well as, well, I say that, my dress sense is not very good, but I'm functional, you know, jeans and a T-shirt pretty much. But so I've no, you know, insights into the fashion world. Maybe what she's wearing is trendy. In my eyes, it looks like a mess. But that is inspirational, especially if you've got, you know, young kids who maybe have just gone through GCSEs or A-levels, not done very well. You think, this lady here, she'd left school with very little dreams, really, hopes. Maybe she had ambitions in some way. But little did she think she'd rise to be the second most powerful person in politics after leaving school in the worst way possible, pretty much. You know, pregnant, no qualifications. So getting a job was probably a distant dream. But what she has done, I suppose, I mean, she did say in an interview this week, earlier this week, that she's sought expert counsel on her stamp duty. And they said she didn't need to pay extra stamp duty. Now, what she didn't say was she asked the conveyancer. Conveyancers pretty much help you buy your house. That's what they do. They may know something about stamp duty, but when we recently sold a house and a few flats because, you know, my wife questioned our conveyancer's advice. So even at, you know, our level, my wife questioned it, discovered something, he was wrong. And the conveyancer themselves said, we're not an expert, that is not our field, on stamp duty. You know, if you've got a complex setup, you have to seek, you know, professional advice from someone who specialises in stamp duty or tax. And so it seems like she didn't say this. And they did say, apparently, well, she told us her situation. We just put into the HMRC stamp duty, you know, calculator on the website, and it showed she didn't pay any extra stamp duty. So what I'm thinking she told them is that she didn't own two properties. When in actual fact, her house in Manchester, she put in a trust for a disabled son, or I think his son or daughter. But for tax purposes, until that property goes to that, you know, son or daughter, it is in her name. So she does have two properties. So did she make an honest mistake? I don't know. I can't assume that if you're at her level of government, you know, everything you do is scrutinised by journalists. They go through your bins, for heaven's sake. Would you honestly try to cut corners on stamp duty, knowing full well you'd be hung out to dry if you were caught? I think where she failed here is being not very professional, which is slightly worrying. If I mean, you know, my wife is very, you know, she goes into fine detail on anything. So even my wife corrected the conveyancer. I think a lot of people just assume solicitors, but at her level, she can't afford to do that. You've got to, you know, cross every T, dot every I. You've got to be above scrutiny, really have, whiter than white. So it's a little bit worrying on her part. Maybe she's busy. Of course she's busy. She's holding three jobs down pretty much. But you get people in, don't you? Experts, look at that. So all I can say is, you know, it's quite sad because I don't think she'll be skinned. She'll always go into pretty working good jobs now, so she probably hasn't lost the house. But it's quite sad that she's done so well and she's, you know, fallen at this hurdle, which is a silly mistake on her behalf. And it's just, you know, I think lacking, you know, attention to detail at this level, you can't do it. You can pay people, experts, to do that. They'll look at it for you. So do it. It's worth it. You've lost your entire career because you didn't double check. And apparently that solicitor did say to them they weren't, you know, professionals. Do you know what's annoying at the moment? The markets are quite soft. It's very frustrating when your stocks, if some of your stocks are down and it feels like they never change. It does change, you know. As an example, you know, if you're in the winter and it's rained for like 2 weeks nonstop, it'll feel like it'll rain forever, but you know it won't. You know? And this is where humans fail to a certain extent. We're emotional beings. You know, when markets or stocks have sold off, our emotions tend to get the better of us, you know, and we seem to do the... And when markets do sell off, it's an opportunity. You've got to see it like that. I mean, if you're fully invested, fair enough. It's hard. You have no optionality. But you should always sit in a bit of cash because there's always opportunities in the market. And when markets fall, it tends to make us bearish, and you know, which can lead to selling. Irrational selling, emotional selling, which is never a good thing. When in fact, we should be buying. Our emotions get in the way of the numbers, essentially. I think you understand why pre-revenue stocks, story stocks pretty much, are very powerful. Because as humans, we latch onto the story. It's all about the story. You know, the best films are the best stories. We latch on stories first and foremost. Like I said, a company with a good story sometimes trumps, you know, a company with good fundamentals is very boring. Even though the one with the story is fundamentally bust pretty much. You know, I see stocks on a daily basis rallying when I look at their balance sheets and their revenue and what the and the loss and the losses they make. Why is that rallying? Sometimes just story and market dynamics where, you know, more people are buying than selling, that will push share price up. But a lot of those stocks are not sustainable. They'll pop, they'll drop. And largely, most private investors will hear about that story stock when it's rallied very hard. And so they tend to buy towards the top and then it'll crater because the company will need to raise money and they'll be down sort of 80, 90% before you know it. And that's why it's always better to look at stocks with a fundamental backing. You know, that they're a good value based on profits and they're growing. So when the stocks, you know, when a stock is sort of bombed out, but the fundamentals are looking good, it's an opportunity. You know, if a company, for example, has stated they're in line with expectations and those expectations are showing the company is growing and the valuation is good, it's probably worth investing in, even when it's going down sometimes. I always talk about the book, portfolio management is very important, and most private investors don't have a plan for portfolio management. They tend to put too much in. And you can do that. You can put a small amount in to a stock you think looks good. And if it drops by even 20, 30%, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's not going to affect your total portfolio value. But if you know there's some dynamic in the market, there's someone selling for some reason, then just wait it out. And the result is you end up picking up stock for cheaper when it starts to bottom out and starts to rally. You can buy it cheaper than you originally bought it, as long as the fundamentals are improving and they haven't changed from when you initially invested. So essentially, share price goes down, valuation gets better. The upside gets greater. You know, so sometimes when stock falls, even if you're holding it, it is an opportunity. You know, see it as a placeholder. Understand that when you first buy a stock, you're never going to get the ultimate best price for it. But when you start small, you have optionality to manipulate that price by getting, you know, a lower price at a better value. So, yeah. And by the way, if you only buy, you know, stocks when the market is bullish, you'll never make a lot of money, really. You'll never beat the market because you are acting like the market. You only beat the markets by being a little bit contrarian, but with the numbers to back it up. So just buying any old random stock that's been hammered will not make you money. But buying a stock that's been hammered for some reason, maybe general sentiment, whatever, a bit of worry about the stock, or there's a big seller in there, and with smaller macro caps, you know, one big seller can take it down a lot, then you can make a lot of money. If you don't worry about the share price too much, you just focus on your portfolio management, realize don't overexpose. Just make sure the fundamentals of the company are improving, as in growing, and the value is good. The valuation is very good. And over the long term, you can do very well. Don't be scared by stock falls, as long, you know, if you're not overexposed and the company is improving and the value is good. So, yeah. This is a note to myself sometimes, you know. So in this market, you can buy a stock, believe it's good value, and it can become better value if you don't buy, you know, if you don't pay attention to the momentum sometimes. But yeah, so there we are. Okay. Did I look at the markets? I did see some of it, didn't I? So FTSE, let's go alphabetically here. In fact, just put them in alphabetical order. FTSE all share. It's down 0.1%, 4977. AIM all share. It's up 0.33%, 764. I think rebounding from Jet2's sell-off yesterday. Where did that get to? Because, of course, it's a big constituent of the AIM all share. Oh, it's, wow, look at that. Yesterday, it went down to 12 quid a share, £12.08. And then it rallied, closed at the end of the day, at £14. So it went to the low of £12.08, rallied to £14. That's back to £14.61. So the AIM all share is up third. Brent crude, down 2.5%. That's worry about the American markets, is it? And labor, I suppose, because less people working, less oil being used. I assume that's what that is. Bitcoin. That did rise, that's coming off. It's just reflecting, Bitcoin's ridiculous. It's not a non-correlated asset. It's completely correlated to the NASDAQ or the S&P. That, it was showing signs of breaking previous, you know, sort of resistance there, which was 110, finished above that. And now it's down. In fact, it got to one today, 113,000 got to, along with the NASDAQ, which went up and came back down. And now it's at 110. Dow Jones down 0.5%. The dollar index down 0.75%. So we are now hitting sort of almost at the bottom of this range. And of course, with interest rates coming down, dollars are going to get weaker. Let's look at the bonds. UK bonds, the bond yields, these are, of course. Now, if you remember, the 2 years is short end, pretty much. The 30 is the long end. And what banks tend to do, and of course, it relies on everything else, is they tend to, you know, borrow at the short end and lend at the long end. And the gap between those two is the profit they make, pretty much. So when you see bank stocks taking a hammering, or even builders, house builders taking a hammering, it's usually because the long end is going up, because that's where people, you know, borrow mortgages at. And so if the cost of the long end is going up, then it's going to be costly for people to take out a mortgage, and so, of course, less people take out mortgages. Anyway, the two-year yield. The yield is down 0.75%, 3.9. It did get up to over 4% start of the week. 10 years down 1.34% to 4.65. So that's, wow, that got up to 4.8 the other week. So 4.65. And the long end, 30-year, is at 5.5%, down from 5.7. In fact, it did peak out at 5.75 the start of the week. So it's down quite a bit there. A pound will buy you €1.15, and now it's back to $1.35. So it needs to sort of break that 1.36 level, really. It seems to be resistance there, just climbing towards that. Gold up 1% to an all-time high. That's my harmonica, an all-time high. It'll help Ramsden's. Oh, yes. Of course, there's lots of gold stocks you could buy that'll do better than that, but Rams is a safer play with a dividend. That's what I like about it. Copper, flat, pretty much. The 250, it's up a third of 1%, 21,531. The 350, it's down a tenth of 1%, 5,030. The fledgling is flat, 15,532. The Russell 2000 in America, that's pretty much flat, 2,378. And the small cap is up 0.25%. This is UK small cap, 7,097. Yeah, the S&P is down half. The FTSE 100 is down 0.16% to 9,207. Okay, so I did three companies a day, but only one of them has news out. So I'm adding companies every day to the database, as long as they're sub 300 million and they're profitable. And I add them. If there's one that's going to be profitable, then I will add it. According to broker forecast, I will add it to the database. It's going to be a busy week with results coming out the next few weeks. I'm going to be looking at the calendar here. For example, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. 16 results out next week. That's nothing compared to the week commencing the 15th. On September the 16th, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's 12 companies with results out. I have no idea how I'm going to keep up with that. But in that week alone, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 22 results out the week commencing the 15th. And in fact, even the week after that is quite busy. So, yes, September is interim results season, pretty much, half-year results. It's going to be very busy. So I don't know if I'll be able to do a podcast, because I'll be just inputting the data into the website. But the only company I'm going to cover today is Gear for Music. What are they? 280, last looked at them, 280 a share, £3.6 a share. Oof. So at £3.6 a share, they're £64 million market cap. 70 million enterprise value, according to their last set of figures. But they are an online retailer of musical instruments and music equipment, operating 21 websites in 15 languages and 9 currencies. Give Music is the largest retailer of musical instruments and music equipment in the UK. They sell own brand musical instruments and music equipment alongside well-known premium brands, including Yamaha, Roland, and Fender, to customers ranging from beginners to musical enthusiasts. Andrew Woss, CEO, holds 22.8%. So owner-operated, call it that. Now, remember, these companies, Gear for Music had the perfect storm after COVID because, do you remember COVID? Everyone kept doing these TikTok videos and these short videos about them learning the guitar in 6 weeks. Big-headed gits. I just learned to eat more crisps, essentially, during lockdown and watch a bit more telly. But they came out with an AGM statement there. This is a second upgrade here. So they do say they're trading ahead of expectations in the last few months. They say strong trading in the year-to-date provides the board with sufficient confidence to once again increase its expectations for the group's financial performance for the year ended 31st of March 2026. By the way, on the website, any significant news like this, ahead of expectations, all that kind of stuff, then it's highlighted on the significant news part of my website. So rather than patrol hundreds of RNSs a day, if you remember, you just go to the significant news part of the website and you see all new contracts, all stuff like that, highlighted in the significant news part of the website. So it's very handy to save you time. Anyway, forecast now. Revenue up 6% for 2026. Let me just look at the forecast here. Yeah, revenue up 9% for 2026 to 160 million. And profit before tax up, net profit up 357% to 3.8 million. They only made 800,000 last year. So currently there's a PE of 17, enterprise value versus earnings ratio of 19. There's more improvement for 2027, up 2% top line to 163 million. Net profit up 8% then to 4.1. This is a PE of 16, enterprise earnings value of 17. So in my mind, this has rallied hard enough. It could move up a bit more momentum, but for a company with low single digit net margins, I think this is no longer in bargain territory unless they release further upgrades. Now, what's probably worth looking at, it's in a similar kind of sector, not so much to the beginners and all that stuff, but is Focusrite. Tune is the ticker there, okay? A global audio products group that develops and markets proprietary hardware and software products used by audio professionals and musicians. So they're more high-end, and they've got several of their own brands. But at 164 a share, they are market cap of 96 million, enterprise value 108 million. But they do seem to be improving, if you look forward for 2025 forecast of 163 million, very similar to, what's it called? Give Music. And the net profit expected to be up by 134%, 6.1. Now, their PE is 16, enterprise earnings value 18. But in 2026, further improvement is expected, 5% top line, 171.4 million. And net profit going up by 43% in 26 to 8.7 million. That puts them on a PE, forecast PE of 11 of where they are now, and 12 EVE. So, and continued growth is expected in 2027, which makes them even cheaper. So that hasn't really moved, and they're a bit cheaper. And they do have a bit better margins than Gear for Music. So maybe worth watching that one, Tune. Having said that, I think the owner, the non-exec chairman, who's Philip Duddridge, is a non-exec chairman and founder, still holds 32.5%. So that's, it's good to have them in alignment with other shareholders. And plus also, supply of stock means, is reduced a little bit there. So it tends to move better. But I do like the chart of G4M. G4M is already broken out. But I don't own any stock in Focusrite. But it hasn't broken out yet. There's sort of resistance at about 179. So if they break that, maybe it's going higher. So there we are. We have a tip there. But it's not a tip. I mustn't say tip. It's not a tip. It's a tip to do some research, further research. Do your research on that company there. But wait for maybe a positive update, and it could go, you know, higher. Who knows? Who knows? Again, portfolio management comes into play. You know, start off small. And if it's got multi-year improvement, then you'll see multi-year gains and, you know, plenty of chance to increase or average up a little bit. That's it. Like I said, I don't hold any of that stock, so I'm not talking my own book there. But that's it. Have a nice weekend and speak to you next week. It's going to be a busy one, earnings-wise, and the week after, and the week after. So the next 3 weeks are very busy earnings-wise. Yeah, much as appreciatos. Sharepickers.com. Check it out. Speak to you next week.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.